Hi, good evening. First, ladies, thank you for letting us come tonight. It was really kind of weird and awesome, and I know why these women's meetings are well attended. You guys eat pretty well. And anyway, it's a lot of fun, and thanks for letting us come. And I get the honor of introducing Nika. Nika is a friend of mine. She was a student in one of my classes that I teach, adjunct professor of New Testament at the King's University, and she was in I can't remember if it was the theology or Revelation, or it was all the theology classes. And so, I get a lot of papers that I have to read, and as Donald Trump would say, they're not great. But hers were great. And so I told her one day, I said, well, you're an excellent writer. She says, well, I'm a kind of a writer. She says, I wrote a book. And I said, really? So I looked it up on Amazon, and I bought it that day. And it's called 12 Clean Pages. It's her memoir. She'll tell you about it, probably tell you a little bit about her story. So I don't want to tell that. But it literally made me cry. I don't have many emotions, but I cried and I laughed. And it's a fantastic book, and I encourage you to get it. She's got another one out that's coming out in April, and it's called Hunting Hope. Hunting Hope. She asked me to review that, and it is excellent. I appreciate when the Apostle Paul says, when he says, in everything give thanks, because he's writing that from prison. And I appreciate when James says, count it all joy, my brethren, when you face trials of many kinds. And he's being persecuted. So if I want somebody to take me over the mountains, I want someone that's done it before. Not somebody that's read about it. Not somebody that knows all the maps. Somebody that's gone over. And so when somebody comes to talk about the hope that Jesus offers, I want to hear someone that's experienced that. And knows that. And so I know you're going to love her like I do. She's funny and she's beautiful and happy and joyful. And we're just very glad you're here. As she drove up, she said, y'all are really far out here. So, yeah. Anyway, so this is Nika.
There's always the gymnastics part that I have to do to get up here. Thanks. I was 12 years old when I first felt the pressure. My knees started to swell. And I'd never really been sick before, ever. Not even with much of a cold or the flu. I hardly ever went to the doctor. But with these swelling knees that would not stop, my parents took me to pediatrician after pediatrician, trying to find the source of it. It took almost a year to discover that I had systemic lupus that was attacking my kidneys. They almost failed, but they put me on high doses of steroids to stop the immune activity. My own body was attacking itself. My immune system is overactive, and so it goes after my own flesh instead of foreign bacteria. And so I was pretty stable for most of junior high, and then in high school, lupus returned with a vengeance, attacking my kidneys again. And the doctor said, we can't go back on the high doses of steroids that you were on. There's an experimental treatment for lupus now, and it's chemotherapy. And so I remember they warned me of all these things. They said, now you could experience later in life all kinds of repercussions for having chemotherapy at such a young age. I was 18 at the time. And they mentioned all of these, and I remember listening to the terrible, terrible list that should have scared me to death. But I said, okay, all I really want to know is, am I going to lose my hair? Because my senior year, prom was coming up and graduation, and they said, trust me, you won't lose your hair. You won't lose it at all. I said, okay. if we can do that, then I'll do it. See, I was on a chemotherapy dosage that was less than a typical oncology patient. So I received chemotherapy once a month for 2 years. And since it was once a month, they thought my body would have time to recover between each dosage. Well into April of my senior year, one day I was taking a shower and clumps just started falling out. I tried to hide it for a while. I went to school and just kind of teased my hair strategically. And then one day, I went with a friend to a steak restaurant, I remember, and she had a Jeep that she took the top off of every spring. So we were riding in this Jeep to this restaurant, which, you know, I should have thought this through, but we get to the restaurant and there were glass doors. And I remember I walked up to the door and I went, oh, Becky, come here. She came over and I said, is it just me or did I leave the house with a lot more hair than this? She said, it's time to get you a wig. So I got a wig. But here's the thing. I strongly believe that laughter is the best medicine. So it doesn't matter what I'm going through, I'm going to find a way to laugh about it. And one day, a friend of mine and I went as chaperones for a children's home that they were all going to a skating rink. And he and I had planned this jitterbug dance that we were going to do on roller skates. And sure enough, the DJ was playing this music. We went in the center of the big group of kids from this children's home. And we're high school seniors thinking we're big shots. And I have the wig on, which was like a little bob with some bangs. Not too different from what I have right now, actually. And so he and I start spinning. The kids move back. It's like our own Dancing with the Stars moment. Before Dancing with the Stars, we're skating with the stars. So we're on roller skates, skating around, and he says, let's do the flip. Come on, let's do the flip. Well, we had this flip planned, which I had never actually done on skates. It worked well in his driveway, but on skates, anyway, I did it, the flip. And that's when a little kid screamed, it's a dead cat. And what she was referring to is my wig on the ground in the middle of the skating rink. So I fell to the ground. My friend skated over. He said, just wait. He went and got the wig. He slapped it back on my head. And he goes, she's all right. Come on back out, kids. Come on. She's all right. Get up, Nika. Get up. I said, I can't. You put my wig on backwards. I had long hair in the front, short hair in the back. And I thought I had it all under control. I knew how to be the funny girl on chemotherapy. I knew how to keep my chin up, even though it was hurting every day from extreme arthritis due to lupus. Then I went to college, and lupus came with me. So did the chemotherapy. And I started my freshman year bald. In fact, I wasn't going to let it slow me down. My friend Becky, who had suggested that I get a wig, was the one who helped me think of a campaign slogan when I ran for freshman class president. I was like, you got to think of something that's going to make me stand out. She said, you don't need any help standing out. Let's go with have a bald with Nika. So needless to say, nothing was going to make me slow down, even though my doctor said, you have got to slow down. I know that you're uncomfortable during the few days after the chemotherapy treatment, but you don't just like get pumped back up and go back to class. You have to rest. You have to take it slowly. I did not listen. And my sophomore year, I became very dizzy. Still on the chemotherapy, I was very dizzy. And day after day, I got more and more dizzy to where I couldn't even walk and do something else at the same time, like look in my purse for some gum or for my car keys. And one day, I decided I've got to go home and get this checked out. My doctor said, more things are going wrong with you than you even know, because I was also going blind in my left eye at the time. I said, all of this seems disjointed. He said, no, all of this is pointing in the same direction. If you're dizzy, too dizzy to walk, if you're weak, if you're going blind in your left eye, then it's possible you could be nearing a stroke. We did all kinds of tests, and nothing showed any activity in my brain that was abnormal. And yet I had a stroke anyway. One Wednesday night, out of the blue, an ambulance came and rushed me to the intensive care unit. And I listened as my mother asked the doctors what was going on. At that point, I could move nothing, nothing. Could not open my eyes, even to blink, could not open my mouth to speak, could not move anything at all. And the doctor said, your daughter has such a brain injury, she has 48 hours to live. You need to bring two of her friends to say goodbye. And so she did. She brought two of my friends who said goodbye, and there was nothing I could do to answer or speak. One of my friends, Becky, the one I told you about, said, if I lose my right arm tonight, I'll never forget what it was like to have a right arm. But when Jesus comes, even though you're my right arm, I want you to go with him. And there was nothing I could say to comfort her. The doctors also said that if I survived the 48-hour window, that I would never walk again. I would be a vegetable, never speak again, and that my parents needed to look into assisted living for me. My mom said, no, no. Has anyone ever survived a brain injury of this magnitude? He said, no, Miss Maples, we can't offer you any hope about this. Listen, it was day to day when she was in the early stages of this, it was day to day, but now the situation is minute to minute. She said, and I heard her, she said, I ask you if anyone has ever survived a brain injury of this magnitude. He said, Miss Maples, I can't answer that for you. We're dealing with just your daughter. We're just addressing this the best we can. I can't give you any promises. She said, I ask you if anyone has ever survived a brain injury, the same kind of injury that she has in her brainstem. And he said, fully recovered? Maybe one? She said, one is all I need. And she took her requests to the great physician, not to the physicians who thought they had a few answers, but to the one who had known me since before I was born. He had the first word in my life, and he would have the last. I can't even go any further with what I plan to say without saying, look at me. God has done this. God has done this. And I don't care what has happened in your life, what situation you think is dying or dead. I don't care if you think it's got about 48 hours left and that's it. I don't care if you think it will never be the same again. God has the last word. Not anyone else in your life, not even you. It became difficult after I did live, though, because the pressure did not ease. I was still paralyzed. Although I could open my eyes and maybe open my mouth, I could not move. And they moved me from the intensive care unit to a regular hospital room. And one day I cried for the first time, really cried. And my doctor came in and he said, Nika, why are you crying? I said, because I can't move. He said, I'll get you an appointment with a psychiatrist. My mother knelt by my bed and she said, why are you really crying after he left? And I said, because I'm afraid I will never be happy again. And she said, the kind of thing that only a mother who knows the Holy Spirit can say. Because we can speak into our children's lives exactly what they need to hear if we listen to him first. And she said, what I'm about to tell you is going to be so hard. I don't think you'll like it. Nika, if you have to move 1 inch in order to be happy, you never will be. Because there will always be one more inch to move, and you'll never get there. You'll never make your way to happiness, because there's always going to be one more thing to achieve. There'll be one more thing to receive. There'll be one more goal for you, one more thing you need in order to be happy. Contentment is found, she said, now. She was right. I didn't like it. I hated it. Nobody wants to be told when they're under great pressure, contentment is found now. But contentment is a jewel. It's a treasure. It's elusive, really. It's found only when we look for it with keen eyes in the dark situations in our lives. That's why I picked the woman in Luke 8, 43. A woman who was hard-pressed. Can you shine it up there? Because I didn't bring my Bible. Okay. I did. It's in the car. But this woman, and I apologize to the men in the room. I had heard this was a ladies-only event. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding, and she could find no cure. Coming up behind Jesus, she touched the fringe of his robe. Immediately, the bleeding stopped. Who touched me? Jesus asked. Everyone denied it, and Peter said, Master, this whole crowd is pressing up against you. But Jesus said, someone deliberately touched me, for I felt healing go out from me. When the woman realized that she could not stay hidden, she began to tremble and fell to her knees in front of him. The whole crowd heard her explain why she had touched him and that she had been immediately healed. Daughter, he said to her, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. I grew up referring to this story as the woman with the issue of blood. Did you call this story that? I haven't seen that in passages in a while, but the woman with an issue of blood is a more appropriate title, I think, because then we're all included, because we all have issues. And so whatever your issue is that you brought here that concerns you, the thing that's dying or dead, the thing that has plagued you for 1 year, 5 years, 12 years, the thing that has been upsetting you, that's the issue you need to have in the back of your mind as I continue. The woman realized that she could not stay hidden. She brought her issue, got in the presence of Jesus, thinking, I'm just going to stay hidden. She realized she couldn't. I think there are things that we hide behind with our issues because we don't want them to show. And the three most common things that we hide behind, these veils that we keep before our faces, are competence, minimizing, and prioritizing. By competence, I mean, oh, I can do it. I can do it. I don't need to tell anybody at church that I've got this issue because I can do it. I can handle it. Or minimizing, I don't want to bother anyone at church with this. It's nothing. It's nothing. I don't want to tell my friends. There's bigger things going on for everybody, and I just don't want to make a big deal. It's nothing. Or prioritizing. I'm going to let somebody help me with this. I'm going to reach out. I'm going to let somebody know. But after I do these things, after I put these things first, these people first, let me care about this first, care for this first, and then I'll open up and let everyone know about this long-standing issue in my life. The woman realized that she could not stay hidden because she was hard-pressed in that situation. The crowd was pushing up against her. She was under pressure. And here comes one gaze, a gaze that she could not escape. But look, she wasn't the only one standing there under pressure. We look at the teacher who was under pressure as well. In verse 45, it says, Peter answered, Master, this whole crowd is pressing up against you. That's what I had to realize in my situation. As hard pressed as I was with lupus, I felt very alone. No one could understand. I felt like if I explained to anyone, it's so weird. I'll feel fine one minute, and the next minute I'm almost crumbling to the ground. I'm in so much pain. It happens that fast. I can't explain what it feels like when your own body is the enemy that attacks you. There's no medicine that you can give to make your own body go away. And it's not a foreign thing. It's me. What God made turned against myself. But I realized I'm not alone in the feelings that I was feeling. Not alone, even though for days and days and days I could not speak to anyone. No one hugged me. No one talked to me. No one read me a book. No one turned on music except once. No one did anything. I just laid there until I gave myself over to praying to the one who was in it with me, the one who was in me, the same one who was hard-pressed in the crowd with the woman with an issue. He was feeling the pressure of everyone all around him. They wanted him to go this way. They wanted him to be headed toward what they had on the agenda, and he says, stop, and turned around. When you are hard-pressed, Jesus is hard-pressed. When you are uncomfortable, he feels uncomfortable. When you're in pain, he feels pain. When you are confused, he understands that feeling. He knows every answer already, yes, but he understands exactly where you are and what you're going through. He's choosing to be hard-pressed with you. And in that pressure, you cannot stay hidden. Realize that with the woman. Realize that she couldn't stay hidden and neither can you. We have to come out from behind the three veils of competence, of minimizing this issue, and of prioritizing everything else of the issue. The one who is competent, above all, he wants to handle your issue, not you. The one who is bigger than all, he does not minimize your issue. He wants to deliver you from it in a big way. The one who is first above all does not want you to prioritize yourself and even your issues down so low on the list that you forget your significance in his eyes. You are a treasure to him and cannot be prioritized away. I would venture to say that God wants to deliver us from our veils even more than he wants to deliver us from our issues, because the veils are what's keeping us from coming to him fully. So he may deliver you from your issue, But he's going to go after your veil first. And aren't we so thankful? I want you to ask God tonight. Hey, listen, I'm an English teacher at heart. I taught high school English for a long time, and I will always give out homework. Are you ready? This is your homework. I'm serious. You can't do it here. You might not be able to do it on the drive home. You might have a conversation or two on the drive home, but really, this is like something you need to pray about and ask God. Ask him, what is my setup? What is my setup? Because the enemy strategizes. And the veil is not an innocent thing. It's not something that you just, I just want to kind of hide myself. No, that's the enemy's strategy, and it's your setup. It's more than just a covering. It's more than just a modesty for your embarrassment. It's really, it's the thing that makes you think you can stand in Jesus' place. So if you're hiding behind the veil of competence, you think you can be Jesus in your life. And as long as you think that, you've got a veil, you won't come to him because you don't need him. You can handle it. If you're hiding behind the veil of minimizing the problem, then you keep saying, it's nothing, it's nothing, it's nothing. That's the enemy saying, this is your setup so that you think it's nothing instead of coming through the veil to Jesus and saying, it may be nothing, but nothing is impossible for you. And if you're hiding behind the veil of prioritizing everything you have to do first, even caring for your family first, caring for other people first, it's still a setup. The enemy wants you to be the savior in everyone's lives, even your own. Sometimes you just have to stop and let him do the saving. So I'll tell you, as you go home and think about the Lord, Lord, what is my setup? Because I don't want a veil anymore. I want to come from behind the veil and come as close to you as I can get. I want you to reign in all ways as the Father in my life. I'll tell you, my setup is competence. I think handling a hard thing makes me feel like I'm strong and makes me feel like I'm doing something significant for God. Even if I'm hurting, I'll say, well, I'll just carry it. This is for God. Well, there was this period of time in my life when I experienced a different type of great pressure. This time it wasn't a physical illness. The Lord brought me through a time of obedience where I walked away from a steady paycheck. I don't advise this unless you've heard him clearly. So I went for 2 years really struggling to make ends meet just on my writing. And he's the one who had to make the ends meet. But there was this one time when, I mean, my bank account would get low. And one time it got down to 43 cents. 43 cents. And I kept, every day I'd be like, still there. Still there, the 43 cents. Okay. I mean, I was waiting for the unexpected withdrawal to just blow everything. And I would wake up. Finally, I was praying about this so hard, praying every single day as if I could forget about it. I had my watch set at 1:45. I was like, I'm praying at 1:45 every day just in case I have forgotten about the 43 cents. Couldn't forget. But I mean, I was praying all the time. And one night I prayed so hard, I was down on my face in my house just crying out to God, God, please give me more security. This is, you know, I need more than 43 cents. I trust you, yes, but come on, I'm not just talking about fulfilling the needs of my mouth to feed me. Please, God, fulfill the needs of my heart. You know this hurts to wonder every day, am I on stable ground? It's too hard to trust you like this. I mean, I was like hitting the floor. I was, please, God, come through. I know you can do it. And then I heard a voice in my head, and it was the Lord, as if he were coming up behind me. Is that the way you're going to talk to your husband? I went, what? No. No. He said, okay, I'll be over here. And I just felt his presence sitting in the room with me. I was like screaming out, crying out as if he were far away. He was sitting in the chair waiting for me to just talk to him. So I said, let's start over. I made dinner and I set the table for two. I did not put food on both plates. I'm creative, but I'm not crazy. Put food on mine, but here symbolically was Jesus invited into my home. And I said, all right, I guess we don't have to pray. You're here, so I just started eating. And I talked to him through the whole dinner. I said, thank you so much. We're going to laugh about 43 cents. Thank you for providing for me. Thank you for making me feel safe. Anywhere we go, anything we do is fine with me because it's us. And I never realized that before. When I was beaten on the floor, crying out, it was just me. But here we are, together with a can of beans and 43 cents. And I'm good. Come out from behind that veil of competence, thinking you can pray strong, pray hard, pray long. Listen, there is a time for crying out. I am not saying that there isn't. But I think a lot of times we miss how near he is when he just wants us to talk to him. Removing a veil is always a risk. Being seen is always a risk. I won't say that sitting at my kitchen table that night felt comfortable at first, but soon it did, because the risk is always worth it. I love verse 48 in that passage in the Message. In most other Bibles, it says, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. But in the Message, it says, you took a risk trusting me, and now you're healed and whole. I asked this week for you, my prayer for you, in the days before I came here, and it will continue in the days after I leave, my prayer for you is that you will hear his heart saying, take a risk and trust me. Come out from behind the veil, because behind it there's no hope. But on the other side, with me, there's hope. And I want you to walk away healed and whole. There's one more verse I just had to connect. I want you to take this home as a treasure. Because when you're hard-pressed, when you're hard-pressed with whatever that situation is, whatever that issue is, this is what you will be saying later if you come out from behind the veil and realize that you can't stay hidden. It's Psalm 118, 5 and 6. When hard-pressed, I cried out to the Lord. He brought me into a spacious place. The Lord is with me. I will not be afraid. Trusting is so hard. Why does he make us trust him? Why does he want us to? I think the whys of our circumstances, the whys of our issue, why has it lasted this long? Why do I have to deal with it? Why? The why isn't as important as the who. It's who you're trusting that will make every difference in your life, not why you've had to deal with what you've dealt with. Questions about our circumstances are always questions about sovereignty. Either God is in control or he's not. Submit to him and realize that nothing can touch his beloved. Nothing, unless it has gone through his hand first. And to quote another writer that I enjoy, Alan Redpath says, if it has gone through the Father's hand and through Jesus' hand and hit me, then it has come that far with great purpose. God is watching you and he does not blink. And so you just need to know the who and not the why. It doesn't matter so much what has caused the issue in your life, as much as it matters what the issue is causing in your life. If it brings about bitterness, if it brings about constant disappointment, chronic anger, if it brings about pity, any of those things, then it was all for a loss. I tell you, God has a purpose in his every move on this earth. And so, let that issue, with God's protection over you and with his hand in your life, let it bring about what only he can, which is his glory. When we remove the veil, that's what we see. His glory. When he touches the issue in your life, that's what we see. His glory. His glory is that thing of value that's created under pressure, just like a diamond is. And it's only created in the life of a Christian who is willing to trust him. That's my prayer for all of us today. Bless you in Jesus' name. Thank you.